I am Nicole Paul, and I am somebody who healed her Crohn's disease using Jeannie Patel Thompson's protocols. And they just worked wonders for me. A lot of you might know me from the forum at JeanniePatelThompson.com, where I've been the moderator. And for anyone who isn't familiar with Jeannie, she was diagnosed with Crohn's about 20 years ago now. Is that right, Jeannie?
Yep, that's correct. And Nicole, can I just interrupt and ask you if you've hit the record button?
I did.
Okay, good.
Okay.
sorry about that.
That's okay. And she started out using the traditional medical protocols, and it just wasn't helping. And so she developed this wonderful system of healing, which you can learn more about at her website, which is listentoyourgut.com. That's listen and the number two, yourgut.com. For everybody's reference, if you need any operator assistance during the call, you can hit *0. If you need to increase your volume, you can hit *4. And when I take us out of lecture mode, if everybody can mute their phones unless they're going to ask a question, you can do that by hitting *6. And I think that's all, and let's get started. So, Jeannie, I think everybody is just so impressed by the healing protocol that you developed. How did you do that? What kind of method of experimentation did you use?
Well, I think the background behind it is that I actually come from a family filled with doctors and pharmacists.
Uh-huh.
So I had, you know, at the time of my diagnosis, I had never even heard of alternative healing. I thought herbal medicine was something that people in third world countries used because they couldn't afford the good stuff. So I was just so far to that extreme, and just, you know, any problem, you took a drug. I mean, that was normal. And then, so what happened was, so that's my framework, and that's how I'd been, and when I'd been taught to look at things, it was through the scientific method that, well, you have to do a controlled trial, and you have to repeat it. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything, because if you can't replicate something with the same results, you know, at least three times in a row, then you can't say that, you know, A plus B equals C, because you don't know
exactly
until you've, you know, reproduced it a sufficient number of times. So that was sort of my whole mindset. And, you know, so for the first 3 years after being diagnosed, and of course because of my family's medical connections, they got me into the top gastroenterologist in Canada, and he was actually in charge of a national research team on Crohn's and colitis. And so I was really getting the creme de la creme care, and I was just getting worse and worse with every passing, you know, month, really.
Right.
So by the end of the 3 years, I was just, you know, 13 pills a day. I was sicker than, and the doctors had told me, because I had widespread Crohn's. It was in my small intestine, my large intestine, and they were wanting to start going in and having a look at my stomach because they suspected it had spread to my stomach as well. So they had basically said to me, look, you know, we're really sorry, but basically you're going to spend the rest of your life in and out of the hospital. You will not be able to have children. You will probably not be able to hold down any kind of a job, you know, but that's okay because you can get disability insurance. And, you know, they just sort of, and you know, I don't blame them. I don't hold them as negative, because medical people speak from their knowledge.
Right.
And if I had stayed with the medical system, with the medical protocols, there's no doubt that's the kind of life that I would have had, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's all there is. So, but for me, I've, you know, being a very strong-minded person, I thought about that, and I thought, well, I'd rather die, honestly, because I'm not afraid of death. And if it means, like, because that to me, this, you know, constantly being in and out of the hospital and the drugs and the, you know, continual pain, for me it was a life of torture. So it's like, well, would I rather be tortured for the next, you know, 40, 50 years, or would I rather just die? Well, I'd rather just die, because, you know, that would, number one, be more interesting, and there wouldn't be any pain, and I wouldn't be being tortured. So
true.
I thought, yeah, and, you know, that's really, and I was, you know, I was so 17. I had no children of my own. I was not in a relationship. There was nothing, you know, that was really, you know, if you're a mother with kids, that's a whole different ballgame, right? So I basically said, well, go ahead.
Although I have to tell you, my reaction was much the same. When I read about the side effects and what these medicines can do to your body, that was literally my reaction. I would rather be dead, even with kids.
Well, and you know, so maybe I would have too. I mean, you know, you can't speak until you've been in that position. But, you know, as a single person, it certainly was easier for me to really go maverick and just complete. I basically, what I did was I went to my GI. This was before the internet. So there was, you know, there was no information available, but he, being in his position, he loaded me up with a stack of textbooks, all his latest research reports. I took it home, I read everything, and I was just like, oh, my God, they know nothing. They are throwing darts in the dark, hoping something sticks. Like, we're all just there. So that's what really gave me the confidence to say, you know what, they have no clue. They don't know what causes this. They don't know how to cure it. They're just hoping to keep everybody alive. And, you know, okay, that's good, but that's not good enough for me. So I thought, if I'm going to be a guinea pig, I'll be my own guinea pig. Sure. So that's when I left and I weaned off all my drugs. And at that point, I was actually booked to go to Tokyo. I was being sponsored by the Edmonton Journal newspaper to cover the international fashion shows there because I had a photography business with a friend of mine. And so my doctors were like, you can't go to Japan and you have to have surgery. And I said, well, sorry, I'm going. And I just left and I just said, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I was thinking, well, I'll be in Asia and, you know, they've got, you know, probably some good alternative medicine things. I'll see what's, you know, happening around there. And that's sort of what kicked it off. And I just weaned off all of the drugs and weaned off the prednisone and started my search for what works and just tried everything. I mean, the tiniest little miracle wonder cure, anything you might have heard from. You know, I would go to Zen monasteries and I would go to and I would say, like, you know, what are people taking? What might help? And just basically 7 years of trial and error. And
wow.
Like I said, applying the scientific criteria to my process, which was has to work a minimum of 3 times, completely different circumstances. You know, let a month pass in between, let a couple weeks pass in between, because as all of us know who, you know, have gut issues, they're so related to stress.
Absolutely.
So you can't reliably test an herbal supplement unless you're really accounting for the stress or the circumstances at the moment. So... So that's basically how it all came about and how I went. I mean, I just, like I said, anything I heard of, anything I read about, I tried. And then what made it to the book was all the stuff that worked reliably, consistently, you know.
And I was thinking, you know, we've all really benefited from all that experimentation that you did. I don't know if I would have done what you did, you know, in terms of all that experimentation, but I'm very glad you did, and I was able to benefit from it.
One of my favorite emails I got from a reader was from this father whose son, I can't remember whether he had Crohn's or colitis, but he basically said, you know I can't go so far as to say I'm glad you got this disease in the first place, but really I am, because if you hadn't, who would have come up with this stuff? And I sort of thought, well, yeah, you know, I can see that. I can hear that.
So what happened initially when you weaned off all of those drugs? Because you didn't have your protocols all, you know, there to kind of help. So shape,
you know,
where you went for a while.
Well, like anything, it was a lot of up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting because death was my end point and I wasn't scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was able to happen was that I pushed the boundaries about as far as you can push them.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, you know, I get emails from people and they're panicked because they're having some blood mixed in with their stool, and I'm like, honey, I have filled toilet bowls with blood. Do you know how much you could hemorrhage before you're going to die? You know, when people get so scared because the doctors and everybody freak them out about it.
Absolutely.
Well, when you don't have that fear and you're like, look, if I die trying, I die trying, and you really see, wow, where the limits to the human body really are,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a different thing. So there were many times where, and that's actually what led me to develop the IBD remission diet, was being in a state of extreme hemorrhage. I mean, I had to go in and have 6 pints of blood transfused, and I refused even then to let them give me any drug. And I was lucky because I was here in Vancouver, where the doctors are very aware of patient rights and authority over their own body. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't beating me trying to get drugs into me or anything. And yeah, just basically that continual quest that, you know what, there's got to be a way. And I guess I don't think I had a conviction that there was a way, but it was more that there has to be a way or I'll die trying.
Right. So when do you feel in the course of all your experimentation that you really turned the corner, I guess? Because I know for myself, and something I tell my consultation clients, is what you're looking to see is not you're sick and then all of a sudden you're well. It's mm-hmm. you have ups and downs, but the ups and downs get less and less extreme until, you know, you're kind of balanced and you're just well.
Well, that's true if you're using my protocols,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they do provide you with that gradually spiraling upwards journey to health. But for my journey, I didn't have those protocols.
Right.
So I didn't have any steady progression, you know, one step back, 2 steps forward.
Right.
I had like 5 steps back, 1 step forward, 3 steps forward, 1 step back. Like mine was all over the place depending
right.
on what I was testing and what I was discovering at the time. And then the other thing was, like when you talk about, you know, what were some of the milestones, that's where then the whole emotional spiritual aspect also comes into it, because mm-hmm. there was one time, and this was, I guess it would have been about 2 years after I left the medical protocols, and I was back home at my parents' house in Edmonton visiting. And they didn't know I was coming, so they had booked a Christmas holiday, and so they all left the house. This is the mind-body interplay.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the minute they left the house, I started bleeding. And so they were gone, and I was completely on my own. And I was hemorrhaging. I was filling about, you know, 4 toilet bowls full of blood a day.
Whoa.
Yeah, and I had mouth ulcers all over my mouth, down my esophagus. I couldn't eat anything other than water. And I was in continual pain, so I couldn't sleep. And I basically, by day 2, I lay down and I said, you know, I'm ready to die. I've had a good life. I've done enough. I'm really ready to go. And, you know, I was close enough to death that I could have made that, you know, decision and all the rest of it. And God says to me, no, it's not your time. And I'm lying there, and I'm like, what do you mean it's not my time? And I said, well, you know, like that's my choice. Like I'm going to choose to die. And at that point, I was coming out of the Christian church, but it was still my dominant belief system. So
okay.
I was believing that there was heaven and there was hell, and I die and I'm going to heaven, and that's it. I'm done with all this torture and whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I said, well, okay, so I'll go down to the kitchen, I'll get a knife, and I'll slit my wrists. And God says, well,
goodness.
You still... Yeah, I'm having this conversation. But God says, well, you still won't die because it's not your time. And I said, fine, I'll go, I'll get a gun, and I'll blow my head off. And then I'll really be dead. And God says to me, and I'll send you right back down. And I was like, what do you mean? Send me... No, there's heaven, there's hell, there's no coming back again, there's no... And I was like, what's going on here? So, and then I sort of went, so I, you know, digested that for a bit, that I could be sent back down for another lifetime. And I went, well, you know, and then everything within me just welled up, and I said, well, if I have to live, then give me a life, because I cannot live like this any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't realize, and interestingly, the books that I read immediately after that spiritual experience were all about how people with chronic illness, some of them actually have a subconscious or an underlying wish to die, but mostly it's not that you want to die, it's that you haven't chosen life. And that was me. I was like, I'll live, I'll die, whatever. Didn't really matter. And that's what came out of it. And me saying, give me a life, and then the books was my first big, transition into, I have to choose to be here, and I have to want to be here, mm-hmm. and I have to completely shift, my energy and my intention in that direction. So that was one of the big shifts for me. The big step up towards health and healing. And, after that exchange with God and, I said, well, give me a life, I went to sleep for the first time with no pain, and I slept for 12 hours solid, and I woke up in the morning, and at that time I had known of Elaine Gottschall's specific carbohydrate diet, but I hadn't tried it. So I woke up in the morning, and I went, right, I'm ready, I'm going to do her diet. And that provided me with the next couple steps up that I just started healing from that point on for the next 3 or 4 months. And then the diet no longer worked for me. But that was, that got me out of the place of danger and the place of, extreme ill health.
Right, right. So that's interesting. You bring up the point about it's almost like if you're going to live, you have to have something to live for. That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, not just to say, well, whatever,
yeah.
but to have a really clear directive. I choose life. I want to live. And, I'm going to make it good for myself.
Now, what do you, in the course of, since you published your book, you've done many consultations for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've been active on the forum. What are the most common mistakes that you see people make, either in their thinking or in actual action?
There's a few. So first of all, there is people are simultaneously taking either drugs mm-hmm. or herbal supplements that are causing the exact same symptoms they're trying to get rid of. So acetol is one that comes to mind. Acetol very commonly causes bloody diarrhea. And so people are implementing all these healing protocols, and acetol is the last one that they wean off, and they get really
right.
frustrated. Why am I still having some blood? And I'm like, well, get off the acetol and see what happens. And then very often that's, where they need to go to actually achieve the healing that they want. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's very common is that they're taking herbal supplements. I've heard from a number of people who they've tried everything, they just can't get the diarrhea stopped. So during the consultation, I'll ask for the actual brand names, write out everything that's written on the side of the bottle, and when I go through it, they're taking anywhere from, 2 to 6 substances that cause diarrhea. And so you say, okay, well, you have to get off so that's why, I've tried to really stress in the book that when you're going on this natural healing protocol, stick with the ones in the book, because they are extensively, and that's the other reason I give brand names, because, mm-hmm. Different companies make up different formulas, and then all of a sudden they're going to throw in some MSM because it's supposed to be good for the gut. Well, for normal people it is, and for people with IBD and IBS, it's a nightmare.
Right.
So that's the other main mistake that I see people making. Another big error is because our whole thinking and our whole mindset has been, basically set up for us by the medical, mm-hmm. because that's our dominant system of healthcare here, people really feel like we're conditioned to get the same results. We want to pop a pill, and it goes away. So we want to take the herbal supplements, and it goes away. And we're conditioned to expect the same results, not understanding that the pharmaceutical drugs suppress a symptom. They do not heal anything. So it's very easy the oil light's blinking on your car, take a hammer and smash the oil light. Okay, oil light's not blinking. Great, problem solved. Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
right? Like, we haven't gotten to the oil underneath the hood. We haven't done, and it's, so it's the same thing with natural medicine. And what people have a really hard time getting their head around is that the healing has to take place in layers. The symptom is the final top. It's like the icing on the cake, right? Or the,
right,
or the roof on the house. But underneath that, we have to heal the foundation. We got to heal the walls. We got to heal it until finally you'll see that the roof is good, you know, for want of a better analogy.
Right.
So that's the other thing, is to expect the same type of results and process from natural medicine as you get from allopathic medicine. And then the other big one that kind of ties in with that is, I guess, is the fear. You know, like I talked before about people see, you know, what to me is a very small amount of blood, and they're like, it's not working, nothing's working, I better go back on the drugs, I'm in trouble.
Right.
You know, and just that whole impatience of, you know what, are you dying? No. Great. You know, are you, and just the whole impatience with it. Like, I had one consultation client, she was on, oh, three different drugs and, you know, severely malnourished. And so she does the IBD remission diet and she does a number of the other protocols. She gets herself to the place where she's off all of her drugs. She has no pain. She has no bleeding. Okay, like, this is huge. She's approaching, you know, at least a decent weight. And she gets the erythema nodosum, you know, the little painful nodules,
yep,
on the skin. And she goes back on prednisone. And I was like, oh, you know, like, what are you thinking?
You made so much progress.
She made so much progress, and she got what to me was a very minor symptom. And if you look at it from the paradigm of holistic healing, which is that symptoms are messages, her body was saying to her, okay, you've done really great, but we still have some imbalances here. We still have, you know, perhaps she needed to do the wild oregano oil protocol and clear out some of the pathogenic microorganisms in her system. She needed to go on the high-dose probiotics, and all of that would have been taken care of. Now, see, if the body doesn't give us a symptom and we feel great, we stop with the healing protocols. We stop with the supplements because we're like, oh, we're good.
All set.
So the,
yeah,
body, right?
Absolutely.
So the body has to. The body has to keep giving us symptoms until we really are good, until we really are done. And people have a hard time getting their head around that. And having, and normally what it takes for some people is they need to make a couple of passes at it. So
right.
They'll weed off the drugs the first time, and then something will panic them and throw them back on it. And then, you know, they get a little time and distance from it, and then they go, okay, I'm going to try again. And then this time they can get a little bit further. And you know, that's okay. It's all good, because the principal, you know, negative effect on these diseases is stress and fear.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to take a drug to keep you from, you know, being in a position of complete fear and stress, then that's actually a positive thing, because the fear and stress will damage you more, I believe, than a lot of the drugs will.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really has to, you know, that's why I keep saying that, you know, it's your journey. It's so personal. You have to listen to your own body. You have to proceed at the pace that's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
So those, I guess, would be the main, you know, saboteurs that people do to their own healing process.
Now, what you were just saying in terms of you, it's just so important to listen to your own body's feedback and let that be the final say in what you're
mm-hmm.
going to do at each step along the way, actually brings to mind one of the questions that have been sent in via the webcast. This person wrote in that her husband has very severe Crohn's, and she says he really wants a more definite program of what to expect and how long. For instance, what
mm-hmm.
should happen during week one, week two.
Mm-hmm.
He says he was educated as an engineer.
Yeah.
And he just has trouble with being told to use his intuition.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to somebody like that?
It's very difficult, because let's say I were to give him, and I could give people a 5-step plan, because
mm-hmm.
what I've noticed from my consultations is that people are tending to need the same things with just, you know, slight variations that,
right.
you know, most of the people will see good results from. But again, in terms of a timeline, you know, he's saying, you know, week one, week two, well, okay. So let's say he has 50 bazillion pathogenic microorganisms in his
mm-hmm.
system, and you have only 100,000. Are you going to need the same amount of time on the wild oregano oil protocol?
No.
And also, let's say you just have candida, but he's got mycobacterium, which have that dormant active life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to redo the protocol, you know, every 4 months to kill the ones, the spores that are now becoming, or not spores, but the ones that are now becoming active. So how can I possibly say, do it for 1 week and see this? Because I have no idea what his, you know, his bioterrain looks like.
Right. Right.
And that's why it has to be now. So what he would need a clinic run by a doctor who's trained in my protocols, who could do all the testing and then put him on an individualized program. And, you know, who knows, maybe someday that person will, you know,
will be there.
Come out of the, yeah, yeah. But in the meantime, I mean, it's certainly not going to be me because I'm not a health professional and I'm not trained in that, and that's not my thing anyway.
Right. So you kind of might have actually already touched on another question I had in mind. When people are doing everything right, they're doing, you know, following the healing diets, whichever one is appropriate for their symptom, and they're taking the appropriate supplements, and they're not taking any out-of-the-book supplements, and they are doing EFT, and they still just seem to be in this holding pattern of illness, what would you say?
I would say you just have to have faith and keep going. And that doesn't mean you necessarily keep doing just the same things you're doing because, well, let's just take the EF. Like normally if you're doing all the physical things,
mm-hmm.
and you're still not progressing, you've got to look at the emotional, mental, spiritual. That's
Definitely.
Where your healing is being arrested. So you may say, well, I'm doing EFT, but maybe you're not doing enough, or maybe you need 2 years of EFT to
mm-hmm.
clear because you got so much stuff. You know, I mean, it really depends on, you know, how mucked up and traumatic your childhood was,
mm-hmm.
What are your daily patterns for moving through your life? You know, are they healthy patterns? Are they stress-producing, illness-inducing patterns? And those can't be changed in a couple of weeks or a couple of months even.
Right.
So you may also need, you could say, well, I'm doing the EFT and I'm doing that and nothing's well, then try craniosacral, then try hypnosis, then, but just, you have to just keep going. Because, you know, different people will respond to different things.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just, you know, you either make the commitment to it or you don't. And so from my point of view, it's like, well, if you don't and you go back to the medical, where are you going to be? If that's okay for you, then go back to it because it's certainly easier, right?
Definitely.
But yeah, but if you don't like that, where you're going to be, and, you know, you like for me, I mean, I just detest hospitals and that whole environment and the invasiveness to the body, and, you know, I'd rather do just about anything than be back in that. So for me, you know, and for other people who, you know, have made a commitment to natural healing, it's like, well, you just keep going. And you don't know, again, we come into the specificity and the individuality of the healing journey because
right.
hypnosis may work for you, EFT may work for me. For a third person, I need EFT, hypnosis, and craniosacral, and I need it for like 5 years. I mean, we don't know. Seriously. You know, we can't know until we just have to put one foot in front of the other and just get through each day as it comes.
Now, as far as making that commitment and really just moving forward, it actually reminds me of a couple of other emails or comments on the forum that we've had. where people will start on the wild oregano protocol and they're already in a bad way, or they're trying to wean off drugs or, you know, whatever. And they feel like the wild oregano oil is actually aggravating their symptoms. What advice would you give?
Well, first of all, there is always the possibility that your body is not tolerating a substance, or it's not tolerating at that time because you've got too many things going in. The body can get overwhelmed. So that is always a possibility. Another possibility is that you need to just, it's the timing of it. So let's say you're still on a drug and you're still on this, and it's just too much for your liver. So it's not that the wild oregano oil is the problem. It's probably the prednisone or the Imuran that's your real problem, you know, and the wild oregano is just sort of the straw that's breaking the camel's back. The third thing is, with all of these substances, is again, they're not suppressing a symptom. They are healing a root cause. So with the wild, you'll get this with both the wild oregano and the probiotics. People say, I don't tolerate it. No. What's happening is you're getting the Herxheimer reaction. You are getting the die-off of pathogens. Now, when these pathogens, these bad bacteria, bad viruses, parasites are killed off in your gut, they release toxins upon their death. And those toxins, guess what? Make you feel sick. So you may think that this is not helping me, but actually it is. And again, it's just that part of the natural healing, the foundational process. And you have to, and that's what's so, and I understand, I totally, having been through it myself repeatedly, I understand how incredibly annoying and frustrating that is. Because how are you to know whether this is not good for you or whether it is good for you? Because it feels the same either way.
Yeah,
you know?
Physically.
Right?
Yes.
It's like, okay, I'm either intolerant or I'm having a Herxheimer. Go figure, you know? And it's so annoying. It's so frustrating. And that's why it's the time is your only, you know, your only indicator of that. And also, I mean, it's different, again, for the readers of my books than it was for me, because for me there was nobody else. There was no one else who tried this stuff. There's no one else. It was just me. So I was really feeling my way around in the dark. But for people who are reading the books, now there's been thousands of people who these protocols have worked for, either to get them to the point where they're off drugs and they can manage their symptoms, or right the way through to a complete healing and a cure. So that's one thing that you can have in your head. Okay, these protocols and these substances do work. Maybe for me it's just taking a bit longer. Maybe I am really toxic in my gut. I have a crate load of pathogens in there. And so I've got to just go really small and take a long time to kill them all, otherwise, or put up with being really ill. Those are sort of your two choices now.
Right.
You know, and depending on your personality, one or the other will appeal to you. I know a lot of people who've just said, like, oh, man, I lost 10 pounds. I was sicker than a dog. And then, boom, I felt great. And they're the type of people who are willing to go through a severe Herxheimer reaction and clear it fast. For what most people, I think, is to just, you know, even if you just take one drop of wild oregano oil a day, that's going to have a positive effect. Likewise with the probiotic. Yeah, exactly. And you start with that, and then as it starts killing those pathogens, and then, of course, hopefully you're also taking even just an eighth of a teaspoon of the probiotics. Those two together are going to be the start of changing your gut flora to be a positive, healthy environment. And
so it's,
you just...
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just have to keep going and gradually increase as you can.
So for somebody who wanted to start taking the wild oregano, start your protocol, it's not necessarily necessary that they start out with being on one teaspoon of each of the probiotics. They can build up with just a little bit of oregano and a little bit of probiotics until they're on the full phase one.
Yes, definitely. And like I said, like even, you know, even if all you can tolerate is one drop a day or one drop every 3 days,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter. Just start building that into your body. Start getting, you know, start down the path. Because you have to heal and clear the foundation before you can get anything lasting or long-term happening with your healing.
Another question that somebody wrote in on the webcast is she was wondering whether wild oregano could be taken at the same time as aloe and mucosa heal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's only the probiotics that you have to be careful with, because the aloe vera contains some antibacterials, and of course the wild oregano is very potent antibacterial. So you need to take them away from the probiotics, but no, you could take them. And here's the other thing: most people don't keep in their mind about wild. It's in the book, but it's not, you know, really emphasized. Is that wild oregano oil is an anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
So, like a lot of people, because it has the burning sensation in your mouth, you think, oh, it's abrasive, it's acidic, it's burning. No, it's anti-inflammatory. And believe it or not, they use it with burn victims.
No kidding.
Yeah. So it's, you know, also, and again, here we get into the body-mind interplay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking this stuff and you're feeling in your mind, oh, this is so caustic, it's so abrasive, it's burning my mucous membranes, what do you think your body's going to react to? Whereas if you take it and you go, you know, this is just one of those wonder herbs that it presents like this, but it's actually anti-inflammatory, and they use it for burn victims, oh, all of a sudden your gut's going to feel a whole lot better with it going in.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah.
One other question was actually about probiotics. Mm-hmm. One person wrote in wondering if you have any updated opinions on the safety of soil-based organisms.
No, I still haven't seen any research indicating, first of all, there's no trials done on human beings
mm-hmm.
of any length of duration. Like there's nothing that follows for 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years. And so, you know, the main problem with those soil organisms is that they form spores.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what happens to those spores in the gut. We don't know what they do to the gut terrain. All we know is, it's incredibly difficult to kill them. They've tried, you know, commercial-grade disinfectants and sterilants. They've tried heat, you know, higher than the temperature on the surface of Mars. Like, nothing kills these suckers.
Mm.
They are really... and so that's the concern about them. Now, I'm hoping... personally, I think wild oregano oil is your best choice, your best chance of killing them. But again, there's no studies, there's no, and that's what's really, you know, people say, well, you know, farmers, they pull a carrot out in the field and they eat it. Well, you know, I grew up on a farm and we always brushed the carrots off. Nobody eats a carrot with dirt
with
clinging
dirt
to
on it.
No. Yeah, and then they say, well, traditional people, you know, buried their meat in the ground and fermented it. Well, I come from traditional people and I've been to many countries with those traditional people and I have never seen someone put a raw piece of meat straight into the ground where it gets covered in dirt. They wrap it in tea leaves and banana leaves.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrapped in something. So, yeah, it will get a certain amount of bacteria, but it's certainly not getting anywhere near the kind of dosage as you taking a supplement containing billions of these soil
right.
organisms.
Right.
So even the logic, which, you know, we go, oh, yeah, but when you really look at it, you really think of it, you're like, that's crazy. That doesn't make sense. So I would still have to say, and, you know, I'm not saying they're good or they're bad. I'm just saying they're completely untested and they're experimental.
So if you can take them, know that you're conducting your own experiment.
You're doing a Russian roulette thing. You're doing a complete trial and error. And it may be a good one and it may be a bad one. But, you know, and that's my only beef with the industry is they should just let people know that this
right.
is highly experimental and that there are hundreds of research papers showing how these organisms actually cause rampant infection in the body. So that's the flip side of it. If you go and you try to find a research paper showing that Acidophilus or Bifidobacterium causes infection and has killed people, you can't find anything Those are food-based probiotics that humans have used for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
They don't kill anybody. They don't cause infection. But you go and look up Bacillus cereus, Lichenoformis, like any of the, you know, most of the top strains of the species of the soil organisms, and you will find hundreds of research papers from all over the world showing that they cause serious infection and death. So that's the flip side of it. And I've actually posted that on my blog along with all of the research. If you go to listentoyourgut.com and just click on the link for the blog, I've put a lot of those research links up on there so people can go and read them themselves now.
Do you think, because I know one other thing that in talking with people is sometimes just a real challenge, and I went through it myself and made the choice to invest in my health because I wanted to get better and I wanted to do it without resorting to pharmaceuticals. But sometimes it is a financial challenge because people who want to pursue natural healing have to pay for almost everything out of pocket.
Definitely.
Do you think we'll ever see a time when insurance companies will give some support for stuff like that? And the only reason I even ask that is because I'm remembering chiropractic stuff that for ages
mm-hmm.
and ages they wouldn't cover, and now they almost all do.
Mm-hmm. It's the age-old question, and to get the answer, you have to follow the money.
Mm.
So as consumers, our only power is in our wallet. So based on what we spend our money on and what we're willing to spend money on will constitute policy. So if everybody says, I'm not paying for medical insurance anymore, guess what those insurance companies are going to do? They're going to offer alternative insurance because they want to sell insurance policies.
That's
but as
true.
Long as everybody's buying medical insurance, and, you know, everybody's using medical doctors and going to the hospitals, you know, nothing's going to change.
There's no incentive.
Exactly. They follow the money. And then, of course, the flip side of that is if you get an organization, like the chiropractic organization, get strong enough to start lobbying,
mm-hmm.
that's when you'll see a shift happen. But again, chiropractors, you know, can make a decent living from what they're doing, so it's financially worth it for them to lobby.
Right.
If you look at natural supplement sales, we're talking, you know, low profit products, and there's no cohesive body currently because everybody's in competition with each other.
Right.
You know, all the supplement
yeah.
companies, you know, are not working together. They're working against each other or trying to outsell each other. So, you know, it's just a complete financial picture as far as I'm concerned. Or, of course, you always have if the people will rise up and they will say, and they'll start doing whatever they need to do, petitioning, picketing, lobbying, all the rest of it. But it's pretty hard because the people who feel most strongly about it are the sick people and who
right.
have the energy to, I'm going to go
that.
Launch a national campaign. I'm so weak, I can't even get up.
Are you still there, Jamie?
Huh?
I'm here.
did you get a whole, did you just lose me or did you hear a recording?
No, I just totally lost you.
I'm glad you're back.
I
touched nothing because I have a handset with no buttons on it, and all of a sudden I just started hearing this recording about the different letters I could push to get, you know, you can press #5 to go into lecture mode. And it just went on and on, so I just hung up and I dialed back in.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Maybe we can open up the phone lines for our listeners' questions now. I actually have taken us out of lecture mode.
Okay.
So would anybody like to ask Jeannie a question?
Okay, Jeannie, I have a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Debbie. I'm from Pittsburgh. I've been following your book and your protocols probably for about a little over 2 years. I had Crohn's since I was 15. I'm now 50. I've had a couple surgeries. Most recent was after I had put myself on your protocol. For 7 months, I followed it, and I got good results. Had, you know, no, it was taking no medications. But I think what it was scar tissue that had built up so badly from prior surgery that mm-hmm. that's where the blockage was again. So mm-hmm. I finally decided that surgery was the only option at that point. Mm-hmm. And I didn't lose too much. I only lost 4 inches for that. But I'm still off of all medications, and you know, my doctors, you know, I've given them all your books. I said, please read these. And so he's been very cooperative. And my one question is, though, they still push for those maintenance colonoscopies. Mm. I keep putting him off, and I believe in your book you're not a fan of those. If, in other words, if nothing's wrong, if I'm currently feeling all right,
mm-hmm.
you know, would you still put off, you know, sort of what I would consider a maintenance colonoscopy?
Yeah. I understandably cannot tell you what to do, but
right.
all I can tell you is what I do for myself, which
okay.
is I have never had another colonoscopy in the 20 years since I was diagnosed.
Okay.
Because, and my reasons for that are, number one, I find it very invasive and traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
I find it psychologically very damaging and, you know, just the whole psychological mental aspect of it really puts me back to a place I don't ever want to or need to go back into.
Okay.
The second thing is that it completely destroys whatever beneficial flora you've built up in your colon.
Okay.
So if you do have one done, you've got to go really heavy, probably do the probiotic layering where you're taking both the powders and the capsules to build your flora back up. You would probably want to follow it also with some mucosa heal and some aloe vera juice to heal, because it abrades the lining of your intestine, that instrument, and it can perforate right through the intestine.
Okay.
So there's those risks as well. And then the biggest risk that I write about in Chapter 5 of Listen to Your Gut is that they cannot sterilize a colonoscope. It is impossible. And I provide all of the research that backs up that assertion, and it comes from medical journals. It comes from the Journal of Infection Journal, or I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's all in there.
Okay.
They're all mainstream medical publications where the medical profession is testing and policing itself, and they are saying, number one, none of our sterilants work against things like mycobacterium. Number two, the staff error, like they had someone in this one hospital that did a lot of colonoscopies. And they found out that for a period of 2 months, nobody cleaned the colonoscope. It was used daily with I don't know how many patients, because they thought somebody else was doing it, and the other person thought the other person was doing it. So there's staff error that comes into play. So in my opinion, you know, for maintenance, you want to risk contracting somebody else's hepatitis, their AIDS, their cancer, because, you know, there's now a good basis for certain cancers being viral. You want to contract mycobacterium after you've just spent 2 years getting rid of it from your body. For me, that's not an acceptable risk. And the amazing thing about that research is that probably all medical doctors and a lot of gastroenterologists are not aware of that. They have no idea that those scopes cannot be properly sterilized.
Okay.
So your only alternative for that is there is a company called Stryker with a Y,
okay.
and they have now just developed a colonoscope that comes with a disposable sheath.
Okay.
So it's like a condom, right? And
right.
that is your only way you can get one of those done without risking disease transmission. So, but again, colonoscopes are very expensive pieces of equipment. And until consumers, you know, like you and everybody else, starts insisting that your doctor buys one from this medical supply company and uses it, they're not going to be available. And I even contacted them. I said, listen, because, you know, I've got all these readers and, you know, we're willing to spend on our own health. Is there a way we could buy just the sheath and the
right.
doctor could put it over the colonoscope that he currently has? Well, apparently no. It only fits and it's only compatible with the colonoscope that they sell as well.
Okay.
But I believe the website is Stryker.com, Stryker.
Okay.
And so you can give that, you can say that to your GI. You can say, well,
when you get this.
Yeah, exactly. You buy this and the disposable sheath and I'll have a colonoscopy. And then you can photocopy the research from the back of the book, from the appendix, and take it into him, because I bet you 10 to 1 he has no idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's the really frightening thing about it. I mean, there's just so much information, you know, that really these people, especially if they graduated 20 years ago, their whole day is spent up treating patients, you know, they can't be expected to know everything either.
Correct.
So that's where we have to really advocate on our own behalf and do our own research to stay safe.
Okay. May I ask one more?
Yeah.
One more subject. I'm still following the Natron probiotic protocol, and I'm taking 2 full doses a day of the powder, all 3. Is there any reason? I don't feel like that I need to quit it. I don't feel that maybe I'm ready to quit it. It certainly isn't a bother for me to take it. So I've just continued. Can you get too much?
No.
Okay.
You never can, because the food-based probiotics are what's called transient species. You eat them, they live for a while, they die, you excrete them. So you have to continually be taking them in. And traditionally, people have always ate cultured and fermented foods. We've had yogurt, you know, made from scratch, kefir, fermented vegetables, fermented fish. You know, but nowadays in our modern diets, we don't get any of that. And anything store-bought, any of the store-bought yogurts, they're useless from a therapeutic value point of view. So if you started culturing your own foods, like you made your own yogurt, I love the Natron yogurt starter, it's excellent, and you were fermenting vegetables for your own intake and maybe doing some fermented miso or fermented fish or something, then you could probably stop taking a probiotic supplement and still be getting enough good bacteria.
Okay.
But now, Debbie, one more thing I wanted to raise with you. When you had the surgery for your scar tissue because you had the blockage, if from past trauma, if that ever happens again, you ever go into that, what you can do is you just go back on the IBD remission diet until that blockage clears, because it's liquid, it will clear it. You know,
okay.
90% chance it'll clear it, or 99 even. And then you go for craniosacral therapy. Because what craniosacral does is it breaks up and causes the body, it actually changes the appearance and texture of scar tissue. So whereas before you have scar tissue that's absolutely rigid, it can become flexible and stretchy.
Okay.
And then you have no more problem.
I did try that early on, like before the surgery, and although I do feel that it helped, you know, I just felt, I can't really say how, it was, and after 7 months, I finally, something inside me said, you know what, you've got to do the surgery and keep up with everything else. So and I want to say this too, after the surgery, I've had probably 2 or 3 episodes of the similar pain, and I thought, oh my God, I'm blocked again. And that's and that's happened as I've relaxed my diet and added more roughage or more salads.
Yeah.
That's when I would feel it. Mm-hmm. I would immediately stop eating, mainly because I was vomiting, and the food would actually I could vomit the food up as wherever it was clogging. Mm-hmm. I physically felt like, okay, it's clogging like a drain. And I would I stopped eating. I would go completely on your Absorb Plus again.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say anywhere from 3 days, 2 to 3 days. By the third day, I was much better. Everything felt back to normal, and I would slowly then, following your diet, add easily digested food and bring it, just kind of bring everything back again. And that's helped, for the two or three times in the last 2 years that it's happened. And again, and maybe I will take your advice here about the craniosacral at this point, if that happens again.
Yeah, or even just do it on a maintenance basis. Like even just start going once a week or once every 10 days.
Okay.
And get them to the point where they're saying, yeah, okay, your whole abdomen is really fluid now. And then maybe you go to a maintenance of 1 appointment a month.
Okay.
You know, because you,
all right.
you you know, that might work really well for you as well.
Yeah, that was a very unique session. That's I had never tried it before, so it was quite different.
Okay, yeah, it's a very powerful therapy.
Yeah, it really was. It took me a while to find somebody in this area. So
yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
Appreciate
Debbie.
It. Thank you. Sorry for holding everybody up.
Oh, no worries.
Okay.
Anybody else with a question for Jeannie? Jeannie, this is Joyce.
Hi,
and
Joyce.
I just wanted to mention, Debbie was talking about blockages from scar tissue, and I'm wondering if you've had any experience using castor oil packs, which I have found to be helpful.
Actually, yes, you're right. That is another thing that has a very solid history of being beneficial. And it does, yeah. It soaks right in through the skin, and definitely many people find it. And not just for scar tissue, but anywhere the tissue is restricted or spasming or seized up. So, yeah,
okay.
Very good.
Yes.
Very good point.
I actually used a combination. This has been back a few years ago, of homeopathy and castor oil packs that literally, by the time I went back to my gastroenterologist a year later, a very large blockage I had in the sigmoid area from scar tissue, he couldn't believe it. He just kept feeling for it and feeling for it, and he said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
So combination of the two.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, because you're right. That is a very effective therapy, definitely.
Is that discussed in your book for
No, it's not. But castor oil packs, if you just go on the internet and you type that in, you'll be able to find directions on how to do it. I mean, basically, Joyce, I don't know what you did, but when I've done it, I take you put some saran wrap or something over the top of it. You take a piece of flannel or some natural fabric that's really absorbent.
Mm-hmm.
You soak it in the castor oil. You put it on your abdomen or where your lower back, wherever you've got the problem.
Okay.
You cover it with some saran wrap or something, you know, that will prevent it from leaking. And then you put like a hot water bottle or something on top of that so it heats it up.
Okay.
Joyce, is that similar to what you did?
Yes, very much so. It can be a little messy, so you probably want to put
yeah.
it all underneath yourself, and definitely the saran wrap helps. And, you know, I have to admit there are times, even now, if I feel I'm getting a little blockage, sometimes I don't even take the time to do the heating pad and all of that or the hot water bottle. I just even just rub it on and use it, you know, as a massage.
Okay.
Right.
And I find I do that 3 or 4 nights in a row, and it's like, okay, that spot's cleared up. So,
perfect.
Wonderful. Okay, I will try that.
Definitely softens the tissue.
I don't even
okay.
take the time to do the heating pad and all that or the hot water bottle.
We're getting an echo. Can everybody else hear it?
Yeah.
Use it, you know, as a massage. Okay. Another question that came in over the webcast was from a mother whose daughter has Crohn's, and she was saying that she feels her daughter might not have had severe enough symptoms at this point to really commit to everything she'll need to do to handle her Crohn's naturally.
Mm-hmm.
She wondered if you have any helpful tips for following the healing diets and at the same time dealing with school lunches and social occasions.
The kids are always my most difficult consultation clients because, you know, as a mother, I do understand that, you know, for an adult, you can say to them, do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they'll do it. Where for kids, they'll do 1 and 2, but they're not doing 3, and they'll only sometimes do 4, and they're, you know, never going to do 5. And so it's really, I guess it's just as the mother, you've got to have a lot of patience. You've got to just keep putting stuff before her, keep educating her. But you can't force them because, number one, it'll cause a lot of stress, which will counteract what you're doing. And number two, part of her healing journey has got to be to connect with her body and learn to follow her body wisdom. So my advice to people is, you know, to give them the protocol to follow, but within that framework to spend a lot of time educating and encouraging them and teaching them to listen to their own body and giving them the authority to do that. So and recognizing that, you know what, even though she's a child, she may have to hit ground zero before she's willing to invoke the self-discipline necessary to follow these and to allow her to do that, but to point out to her the consequences of her choices along the way so that she sees the cause and effect of what she's doing. And that's what I find kids are really good at. If you say, you know, you see, you ate, you know, you had 3 pieces of cake last night, and today you've got a runny nose because, you know, sugar depresses your immune system. For 1 teaspoon of sugar depresses your immune system for 8 hours, and the child goes, oh, you're right. And then what happens is the next time they just have 1 piece of cake. So it is a learning process for them, and you have to continually be educating them and linking up the dots for them between the cause and effect. And otherwise, just do your best. You know, there's really, because you can't force anybody to do anything.
Anybody else with a question for Jeannie?
I'm just starting out with the Crohn's. I was diagnosed a year ago, and I'm on the Imuran. Can I start the probiotics while I'm still on the Imuran?
You can. You can start everything while you're still on the Imuran. The only caveat to that is if you read, you know, the section on drugs, you'll see that it's your results are not going to be the same as if you were doing the protocols and not taking the drugs, especially something like Imuran, which is, you know, it basically destroys your immune, takes out your immune system. And the whole part of the natural healing program is to heal and balance your immune system. So you can, and a lot of people do, they stay on the drugs until they get comfortable and fluent with the natural healing protocols, and then they gradually start to wean off the drugs when they're feeling more confident and it's everything's not so strange and it doesn't cause them so much anxiety. So yeah, you can do it that way. It'll take you longer to see results, and for many facets of your healing, you won't see results until you wean off the drugs, because the drugs are simultaneously damaging what we're trying to heal. Those are basically your choices. But again, with any drugs, especially strong ones like Imuran, never stop cold turkey. Always wean off them slowly.
Anybody else?
I read something from someone who'd written into you saying that the insurance company and the doctor were complaining, you know, that they'd gotten off their Imuran and their drugs. Does the insurance company usually give people a lot of hassles on that? They want them to stay on it?
Oh. I actually don't know about that, but it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, again, it all comes down to money. If you're spending money, they're making money, so... I know some people have been able to get some of their healthcare costs covered by either getting it deducted from their income tax or getting their insurance company to pay for it. But again, it completely depends on the policy you've got and, you know, how hard you fight for it and all those types of things.
Anybody else with a question?
Jeannie, this is Debbie one more time if nobody has a question.
Sure.
I still use your mucosa heal. I take, is there any problem? And again, that's like I'm 2 years still using it and I still think it helps.
Mm-hmm.
Any problems using that long term?
No. No.
Okay.
None that have been listed or registered anywhere.
Okay.
And a lot of this stuff, you know, especially for someone like you, you've had this, you know, since you were 15,
right.
I mean, this is a long time. You know, you've had a disease 30, 40 years. There's a ton of damage there that needs to be healed. And so don't be afraid about staying on. The only things you don't want to stay on continually are the the really strong substances like the wild oregano. You
can
cycle on and off that. The immune system herbs like the astragalus, the maitake mushroom, again, you cycle on and off.
Okay.
But anything that's soothing and healing and the probiotics, you can just, you know, for someone like you, you may need to stay on all that stuff for the rest of your life to ensure yourself a good quality of life.
Yeah, that's what it feels like to me as well.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'm sure glad I stumbled on your information a couple of years ago.
Oh, no. That's great.
If anyone else has another question, go ahead. Otherwise, maybe we can wrap it up.
Okay.
Well, this is Joyce again. I was hesitating to ask this, but I will go ahead. And I didn't find anything in your book on the subject of vaginal fistulas. And I have one that becomes quiescent, and then, you know, if I start to have a little flare, then that can become active. And I just have been uncertain what to do for that. And I don't typically take herbs because I am on Coumadin for clotting disorder.
Right. The treatment protocol for vaginal fistulas would be the same as for fistulas that are, you know, perianal, or, you know, even people have fistulas coming out their tailbone. You know, they burrow through the bone and come out up there. So the treatment is the same with the syringing the wild oregano and trying to heal
the
bad echo.
Hit star 6 so we mute the background noise.
Treatment is the same with the syringing and that's better. We're still getting the echo, but anyway. So yeah, the treatment is the same with the syringing the wild oregano, because basically you've got to heal the infection in that place. So possibly for vaginal, if it's difficult to get a syringe to the exact site, maybe just, you know, a form of a douche might work well. But again, dilute it proportionately. That's in the book. I believe for vaginal things, 10 to 1 or even 7 to 1 might be okay. Dilute it with olive oil. So I don't know if you can use that. I'm sure you could use that topically even though you're on the Coumadin, but maybe check to make sure.
That's what I was wondering, because it's not, you're not taking it digestively using it.
No. Yeah, it's just going topically, and it's going straight to the site of the infection. So I can't see that it would be a problem. But
okay, well, I'll check on that.
Know.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Anybody else have a question?
After your teleseminars, are you going to also provide them in the PDF format in addition to the MP3?
Yes, they're provided as both the MP3 audio and the PDF written transcript.
Thank you.
So, yeah, if you're a JPT Wellness Gold member, you can choose. JPT Gold members get sent both. And then otherwise, if you're not a member, you can get either the audio or the transcript. Now, the audio is provided for free right after the call. If you just go to that same web page, there's a button there where you can download it, or you can just listen to it again.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
Can you drink too many elemental shakes in a day? In other words, if you're trying to gain weight, is there an ingredient in them that you build too much up?
12 is the maximum that you can take because of the vitamin and mineral levels that are in there.
Okay, thank you.
Could I ask a question?
You're welcome.
Sure.
Jeannie, would that depend at all on whether we're talking about an adult or a child as far as the maximum?
Yeah, sorry. That's 12 is the maximum for an adult.
One more question, if anybody would like to present one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, why don't we wrap things up? Thank you so much, everybody, for joining, and Jeannie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
One more question.
Thanks so much, Nicole.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I would like to ask a question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Let me ask you. My son is 22 years old. He is a senior at college, and can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. We're just going to have to ignore that echo going on in the background.
Okay. He is a senior in college and was diagnosed with severe pan ulcerative colitis.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, they put him on Remicade immediately because he did not have time, they said, to respond to the other drugs. He was pretty bad, and they also put him on Asacol. And I started to do research then, and I have him on the shakes and the mucosal heal, the probiotics, the COQ10. He was on a lot of that when he was home. He's away at school now. Are we wasting our time supplementing this because he is on the Remicade?
Well, the Remicade primarily affects the immune system.
Right.
So, all of that stuff is not, it's still going to be able to have a beneficial effect even though it's, even though the drug is wiping out the immune system. Because the Absorb Plus obviously is nutrition.
Right.
You know, just boom into the bloodstream, and especially if someone's away, that's, you know, rather than eating pizza or whatever, that would definitely be an improvement.
Exactly.
The mucosa heal is, has a healing action directly on the mucosal lining of the intestine. So, with some people, because of the Remicade, all of the inflammation disappears. With other people, there's a low grade. So, that one, hard to say whether it's, needed or not. The probiotics are definitely needed.
And would you do the oregano oil? He's only on two drugs, not on three drugs. I saw your book says if you're on three drugs, don't do it because of the liver.
Well, yeah, because it'll still knock out some of the pathogens so that when he does come to a place where he's ready to wean off the drugs, he's going to have less pathogens in there to contend with. Because the Remicade and all the drugs, they don't kill off any pathogens. They just stop the immune system from fighting the pathogens.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so if anything, the pathogens can flourish. So you would definitely want to do the wild oregano and the probiotics to help keep the gut flora under control. Your only corollary to that is that often these drugs can change the pH of the gut, so the probiotics have a very difficult time living.
Oh,
Yeah, so that's what I mean about, you know, if you're doing drug with natural, you're often sabotaging your efforts because the drug is, you know, wrecking the exact same thing we're trying to heal.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, because it's unknown, you know, unless you're, you know, in severe financial straits, I would say go ahead and do it because, odds are it is having a positive effect, and the more you can have, then, you know, the better.
Okay. And then I was hoping after his senior year of college, he would agree to try to get off the Remicade.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we haven't even talked about it because I didn't want to put too much stress on him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
often, you know, I mean, that's the thing that drugs are really good for. They're really good for just getting us through a place where we cannot or we do not want to take the time and energy necessary to heal ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they can, you know, sort of like using a crutch, you know, you can use it for a while, you know, but then just keeping in mind that you're going to have more damage to heal when you finally do decide to go the natural healing route. But,
oh,
you know,
more
that's
damage
life.
To heal?
Well, because the drugs cause ongoing systemic damage. You know, by the time he gets off the Remicade, his hormones, his endocrine system will probably need addressing as well. So it's all a balancing act, right? It's a question of, well, if I'm in college and I'm not willing to take longer to complete my college, or I'm not willing to live at home or where I need to, because these, you know, natural healing takes quite a bit of work and time.
Exactly.
And, you know, a college student doesn't have those things. and they don't have the support network, right?
Right,
so
right.
Then you'd say, well, you know what? The most acceptable compromise in his position is, yeah, use the drugs to get him through, and then once he's graduated, maybe then he's willing to take, you know, a year to really, you know, like you said, wean off the drugs and get some of his foundational healing going.
And will it take at least a year, do you think, to wean off the drugs?
Oh, no, the weaning process doesn't take that long.
Okay.
You know, maybe even just a couple of months it can take.
Okay.
But then once you've weaned off, see, all of those symptoms that you've been repressing are going to come roaring back.
And they will come roaring back?
Well, depending on, see, if he's taking the stuff simultaneously, then maybe he's not going to have too many pathogens. Maybe psychologically and emotionally, he's a very healthy person, so his immune system can rebound faster. You know, it's so unknown.
Right.
Right? So he may just get a, you know, moderately sicker, and then he may heal very rapidly. It's totally individual.
Okay. Well, I will say your shakes worked wonderfully for him to gain his weight back.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're really good for someone who's in college or traveling. Like, we've got, you know, a number of people who their job takes them on the road a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then for them to have the shakes, you know, when they're away from home and they cannot eat healthy food is, I'm not an advocate of anything processed, and the shakes are a highly processed food. But again, this is where you come into the balance between what your reality is and what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is, when you're in a severe disease state or when you can't cook yourself a home-cooked organic meal, well, that is the best thing. So even
right.
though you wouldn't want to say to anybody, oh, no, just eat Absorb Plus for the rest of your life, no, that would not be healthy. But in certain situations, it's the healthiest thing that you can do.
Right, right.
So.
Okay. And would you recommend, like, I don't know if you'd be willing, but cranial sacral therapy or acupuncture?
It all helps.
All helps, even if you're on these drugs?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was my question.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think that's all we have time for. Thank you, everyone, for attending. And again, thank you, Jeannie.
You're very welcome. And good night to everybody.
Thanks.
Good night. Thank you.